You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Say no me diga with me. Can you say it?
No me diga.
That's fun.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a spicy edition of Too Much Exposition. I am your host, Brendan Henderson, and joined, as always, live from her blanket fort with her gamer headset, it is your friend and mine, Gabriella Day. Gabby, how are ya?
Way to introduce the podcast about In the Heights is spicy. That is what the kids would call a problematic, Brendan.
Is it? It's spicy.
I suppose it is spicy. I guess that is correct. I think this now is where we explain. In our first episode, we didn't super explain what Too Much Exposition, the theater podcast about nothing, means. The theater podcast about nothing pretty much means we're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about. So last week was our Hadestown behind the scenes episode. This week we're talking about In the Heights. We plan to talk about another show next week, but we will not only be talking about shows. We have bigger plans. In the Heights is just a spicy topic right now, so we couldn't resist.
It's compared to Hamilton, it is considerably more spicy.
It is considerably more spicy than Hamilton. I suppose that's correct. If Hamilton is the story of American history, I guess it's more tobacco-y than spicy.
I what?
Anything? What? You were supposed to laugh at my stupid joke. America was founded on tobacco. I thought everybody.
Oh, wow. Very topical for your 1700s humor. I'm sorry, I'm not.
They totally had a dance number in Hamilton about tobacco, right? You were there for that. I didn't make that up.
Did they? Oh, God. There's been so many shows in between then.
So many shows.
Since, what, almost a year ago that it released on Disney Plus?
Yeah, it was 4th of July last year.
Yeah. I remember I got to deal with the family on that one. You know how my family is, you know, very conservative background, growing up in a small town, you know, and not access to anything. It's very isolated and, you know, very, very set in their ways and not willing to look at things a different way. And watch, my family's gonna, like, this is the one episode they're gonna listen to.
Yep, 100%.
But, you know, I had the bright idea of, hey, I want to show them Hamilton. And, you know, it went over about as well as you'd expect it to be.
Aw, I'm sorry, friend. That's a bummer.
It ended with me crying in the bathroom. And my mom needed to come in and check on me. And then me saying, like, how do you have such small ideas? Yeah, it was. And then we went and we went and watched fireworks.
Oh, my heart. Oh.
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that that's your story, your family story about Hamilton, because I think In the Heights hits my family a little bit differently as a Latina woman. Right? Because I was born in Brazil. My family immigrated to the States when I was a baby in the year 2000. We came to America just in time to die during Y2K. You know, everything since then, I guess this is just the Matrix.
Wow.
But my family is really small, right? It's just me, my mom, my brother, and then my grandma came over to visit us as well. So I think In the Heights has, we'll get into it in a little bit, but In the Heights has a lot of themes, I think, that relate to me and my family very strongly. And I'm bummed because I'm taking my grandma to see it tomorrow. And I would like to say what she thinks about it, because my grandma used to be a professional flamenco dancer. So I think she'll like all of it.
How does one become a professional flamenco dancer?
You just dance really well and get paid for it. That's my grandma. She used to pick me up when I was a kid, and I would have two tap classes in a row each night. Sometimes she would come and pick me up, and so she would like sit there in the parking lot of the dance studio, and next door to us they were doing flamenco dancing. And I would get in the car, and she would just, like, talk mad shit about the people doing flamenco. She's like, their hands are all wrong, their feet are all wrong, their form is horrible. I was like, go off, Grandma! Damn!
Wow.
That's not what we're talking about. I wrote here a little wait in the wings moment. I can set it to some music, just like we did last time. Do you want to give this a shot, Brendan? I'm really curious to see how you trying to read my writing go.
Oh, you wanted me to read the... I thought you wanted to do like last time where it's just like, Brendan, give us a really quick history on In the Heights.
Oh, I mean, like, what do you know?
Let's see. I know that Lynn was... This is a very rough... I could be totally
That's
off
fine.
Base with this.
Don't look at the sheet. No cheating.
Okay. I know that Lynn was in a really fancy college, and he was like, I need to impress this big guy on campus. I'm going to do a show that's kind of like West Side Story, but more modern. And my God, I love Rent. So I'm going to try to modify
right.
things. And so they put on the show, and it was like, it was pretty okay. But then he started getting his friends together, and they were in the drama bookshop basement, and he got them together, and it was the same group that did Hamilton, and they were called the Cabinet. That's what they would become known as after Hamilton.
Wow.
But then they kept working it. He brought on a book writer who was able to really refine it to where instead of just being too many narratives, it was like, let's focus on three businesses and gentrification and the importance of community. And then it was really hard to get greenlit, but it got on stage, and then everyone was like, holy shit, Broadway's kind of been super white.
Who would have thought? Did anybody notice? Oh my goodness.
It was like the edgiest thing that Broadway had done was probably Spring Awakening up to that point, which that was probably the like just different style of music, different just representations of stories.
Yeah.
And then In the Heights comes around and is like, you know what works really well in theater? Rapping. Go figure that in a medium where you need to focus on text mm-hmm. and language, that rapping would be a good way to do that.
Who knew?
And then it just blew up from there. And there's a lot more intricacies in there, but that was just a rough overview.
I mean, that's fair. It's so funny because all the things I was expecting you to say, like basic milestones of the show, is not what you said at all. Like always, you like found the human story. You found the human element. You just like, you pulled it out. Like you told Lynn's story and the story of the Cabinet and how they fought and how they're here. And that was amazing. Here's what we actually need to say. Following a tryout in Connecticut and off-Broadway, In the Heights first opened on Broadway in 2008 at the Richard Rogers Theater, which is crazy. Its creator, now famous Lin-Manuel Miranda, had been working on the production since he was only 19 years old and in college. You got that part right. After 10 months, it recouped its initial investment of $10 million on Broadway, and it ran for almost 3 years, closing in January of 2011 with 1,184 performances. It was nominated for 13 Tonys, it was a finalist in the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, and it won the Grammy for Best Musical Show Album. Looking at the history of In the Heights, it's just so funny how, like, the parallels between In the Heights and Hamilton are just remarkable how similar they are. And I think something that Lynn seems to do really well is find a very good creative team and trust them and stick with them, which I think is so important. And it's important to like recognize that and talk about people other than him, right? Because like you can say that someone is right. genius, but it's also very much about the team of people they have around them that they trust.
No, for sure.
That's In the Heights. Let's get into the movie, which came out this weekend, but this podcast is probably coming out like a month late, so it's gonna be really timely.
So here's your refresher of In the Heights.
Here's the refresher.
Hopefully, like, people are still talking about it.
I hope so. I really
it's
hope
gonna
so.
Like it's gonna be like it's gonna be like probably when they hear this, it's going to be an irrelevance, but mm-hmm. hopefully come Oscar season, it comes back up again and it becomes relevant and we can link to it on Twitter.
That's amazing because I wasn't even once like, oh, maybe they'll consider this for an Oscar. Like that didn't,
really?
That did not even cross my mind. I'm like, no way.
I'm pretty optimistic. Like it was, and that's saying something because I usually just go to stupid movies mm-hmm. and I'm like the same way if I don't really think of things. Unless they're like really Oscar bait where you can really tell that they're going for an Oscar, then I won't say this is probably going to get nominated.
Well, but I suppose that's why I didn't think of it like that, because I was like, oh, this was just In the Heights. It was just like a delightful little thing. And the Oscars don't tend to highlight the delightful little things. But you're right. No, it, yeah, by all means, should be nominated, should win lots of things, but we'll see.
God, it better. I can't see it. I can't see any reason why it wouldn't. Like, I can kind of get the argument of why you don't want to nominate superhero movies, even though it's really dumb, because I think that, you know, there's still a lot of storytelling and art that goes into it.
Right.
And I don't think, who knows? Award shows are just stupid.
Yes.
In all.
Award shows are stupid.
I mean, they're like, like, it sucks that they're important and that they do give that status. And that it is just, like, if I won a Tony, you know, I'd be fucking thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
Still doesn't change the fact that it's, like, stupid. That it's just right. a dumb thing of... It's like in college when we won the best independent show. And we got a piece of paper. And I was like, well, this is kind of dumb.
Woohoo! You won best
like, thank
independent
you, but this
show.
Is kind of dumb. Yeah. Look at that. Those are my achievements.
I think in 2015 I won an award for being like a star volunteer at a local regional theater, and it was like this whole award show and this big night, and I've moved this award like 5 times since winning it, and I just unpacked it today and I was like, why do I have this? I don't know that I need this or what to do with it.
Because it's like a symbol that we've, it's a symbol that we've like achieved something
yeah.
in the eyes of society and our peers.
They merit something. I think the legacy of In the Heights yeah. and other shows are more so the impact that they have on people.
Right. But here's, now that I think about it, here's the big difference with like the awards that we got. Compared to a Tony Award,
the prestigious little awards that we got compared to the Tonys. Which ones are those? Is that for
what
music?
Are the Tonys?
I don't even what.
Well, it's important to remember that like while there is that level of, you know, recognition, acclaim, prestige. That's what I want. You know, a lot of it is based off of money. And if you have a show that's really great, but then you put together a really bad Tony campaign, mm-hmm. it's not going to do that well. It's another advertising tool, which is sad.
Give us your marketing background, Brendan. Give us them sick marketing deeds.
I can't remember what my professor said or what the timeline was, but I think it was just like, for each Tony that a show wins, then that's another 2 years onto their runtime, like for the length that the show's going to be on Broadway.
Well, I suppose that checks out. Looking at how In the Heights ran on Broadway for 3 years, I was like, I kind of thought it would be longer, but I also kind of thought it would be shorter. So it makes sense. It's kind of like how we were talking about Hadestown. In the Heights technically shouldn't have succeeded on Broadway, but it did.
No, yeah. You can start plastering that best musical or just that Tony Award anywhere mm-hmm. with the fancy leaves, instantly you're gonna get more people in who are like, well, if this group of elites thinks it's good, then that means I should spend my money on it.
This is like 10 years ago when The King's Speech won like 20 million Oscars. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll watch that movie. And then I'm like, why on earth would I watch that movie?
The King's Speech by Academy Award winning director. I don't know. Did he win the Academy Award for directing?
I have no idea.
Cat's Boy, Tom Hooper.
Oh. King's Speech was Tom Hooper?
Yeah, it's the same guy who directed Cats and Les Mis.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Yeah, he won the Academy Award for Best Directing
in
2011.
Oh my god, our beauty boy Tom Hooper. Okay, wait. Oh, I have so many things I want to say now. I wanted to have a conversation about what movie trailer you saw in the theaters. Honestly, okay. I live in San Diego. You live in Philadelphia. I went to go see this movie by myself. Presumably you did as well. And I sat in the theater and I was like, man, it would have been stupid to fly to Philadelphia to see this movie together, but it would have been so much fun.
I want to talk about, like, before we talk about what trailer we saw for In the Heights, I want to talk, did you get the trailer for that new Hugh Jackman movie?
I did, and okay, so I was sitting
the
there,
Reminisce.
And it was like, you got your West Side Story, and then, like, your stupid kids movies, and then the Hugh Jackman trailer just made me mad, because I was like, are you attacking the theater people who hate Hugh Jackman for making Beetlejuice go away? And I know that that wasn't the case, but I was just sitting there about to watch, like, maybe the best movie musical, and just Hugh Jackman looking me in the eye, and I'm like, screw you,
like,
man.
Everywhere.
I wanted to see Beetlejuice, and it's your fault.
I'm excited that you got to see it, though. I'm excited that they threw it in, that it wasn't just a common, like, wasn't just a coincidence. But it's got the same lady who played Jenny. It's got the same lady who played Jenny Lind in Greatest Showman, the opera singer. That's like, never enough.
I never saw Greatest Showman.
You never saw Greatest Showman? The cinematography. Then you need to watch Greatest Showman and then go back and rewatch this Reminisce trailer, because it's like someone was saying, let's like somebody watched Greatest Showman and then said, let's take all of that cinematography, but make it about action and make it masculine. Because there's a scene where he, like, goes through the blankets and everything, just like in The Greatest Showman. I'm going to say that this is, like, I want to look at this as a prequel to Greatest Showman.
No, I'm not. I don't.
We're going to come back and we're going to watch Reminisce.
I don't want anything to do with this new action movie starring Hugh Jackman.
How many people were in your theater?
It was nice. There were maybe like 8 to 10 of us. It's nice. San Diego, actually, as of right now, our COVID numbers are doing super duper well. We're one of the top cities of like percentage vaccinated, which is really cool. So it's nice that movie theaters are open, but they're still socially distanced, which is great for someone like me who deeply loves going to the movies, but deeply hates other people. Like, I regularly will go to very fancy movie theaters and pay like $20+ for a movie ticket just so I don't have to deal with a bunch of other assholes sitting around me.
Just so you have like the really big cushion seats.
Exactly. And so in my row was just like me and then one other guy who came alone, and because of where we chose our seats, nobody else could sit in our row. It was amazing. It was delightful. People laughed, people clapped, which I have feelings about. And it went pretty well. It's nice that my theater was quiet. Yours was empty?
It was like, that was probably like a 500 seat. Like, it was the biggest auditorium there.
That's crazy.
But it was like 4:30. It was 4:30 on a Friday. At a pretty rundown theater too. Did you go to did you do the IMAX?
No.
'Cause my theater had an IMAX option and I almost did it.
I did not do the IMAX option. I think I might with grandma tomorrow. I don't know.
They filmed it in IMAX. Who films a movie musical in IMAX?
John Chu does. That's who films a movie musical in IMAX.
James Bond is barely getting his first IMAX movie in October.
I'm sitting there in the theater, and then the trailer for West Side Story comes on, and I was like, that's right, Ansel Elgort is in this movie, but also it looks, it looks really good. I'm here for it. And then there was a stupid Hugh Jackman trailer, and then the Dear Evan Hansen trailer started, and I like...
Oh my god, that was when I walked into the theater.
Oh my god, I like looked to the guy sitting down like at the end of the row, the same one as me, and I was like, come on dude, like give me a look if you also don't want to sit through this trailer again.
It's just,
I don't want to needlessly shit on Dear Evan Hansen, but the trailer is also just like, not that exciting. Like, compared to, like, the West Side Story trailer or anything that In the Heights put out, you look at the Dear Evan Hansen trailer, and it's like, this is what people don't like about musicals, is that they're like, I'm serious. I'm telling an important story. I'm whiny and sad. And it's like, it's like the DC movie, the DCEU.
Kind of, yeah.
Of movie musicals.
The DEHU.
Oh, God. No, Dear Evan Hansen universe, please.
It's a new t-shirt,
no.
The DEHU. Well, I was watching that trailer, and it just feels like, you know when you see those, like Fault in Our Stars,
mm-hmm.
one of those trailers, or, like, what was it, 5 Feet Apart?
Yeah.
Or Paper Towns?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Dear Evan Hansen felt like to me.
Yes.
And the problem is, like, Fault in Our Stars was great. It was lucky, because it was cashing in at a time when those movies were still pretty big.
Right.
Because, I mean, we didn't have Twilight anymore.
We had Twilight. Oh, okay. I was like, do you think that movie came out?
No, we didn't have it anymore. Like,
I suppose.
I'm pretty sure that was post-Twilight, I think.
No, it was post-Twilight, not pre-Twilight.
Yeah. It was post-Twilight, yeah. So we were looking for something, but then I saw, like, it's more often than not, it's not going to be good. And that's what I felt mm-hmm. watching the Dear Evan Hansen trailer was like, this is like one of those teen love stories that just isn't good, and they basically give away the entire show.
They really do.
They're just like, here, I wrote this letter. Oh, Connor's dead. Oh, I need to tell him the truth. Thanks for coming.
No, it's just like any bad action movie. It's like you watch the trailer and you know exactly what's going to happen or whatever. It's like, cool,
right.
Thanks, Dear Evan Hansen, for making this super interesting for everybody. Again, I don't want to needlessly shit on Dear Evan Hansen. We will do that another time. But it was just like, compared to what was about to come, I was just like, go away.
Maybe it'll be really good. Maybe it'll blow us away, and it'll be
maybe
the best movie musical since Grease.
Blow us all away. Maybe.
I'm just super bummed about it, because I remember last year when I started up the blog on the website, like, that was one of the first articles that I wrote was about the Dear Evan Hansen movie. And how excited I was at the possibility of it. They Sonic the Hedgehog'd it.
Yeah.
Where, like, why did they put a wig on him?
It
would have been so much better if he just didn't have the wig. He didn't have the, like, when has he ever had a hairdo like that?
Listen, Ben Platt tweeted that that was his real hair. And as a person with curly hair, I'm inclined to believe him. This is my hot, controversial thing.
Why does Ben Platt's hair look like a wig?
Well, because here's the thing, curly hair is not often portrayed in media, so maybe we see curly hair and we assume it must be fake because...
No, it's not because of that. It's because the hair on his head does not match the hair on his eyebrows or anywhere.
Well, I mean, like, he's in Hollywood. Maybe they had to dye it because he's, you know, like, 55 years old playing a teenager.
He's the same age as Jordan Fisher.
That's crazy. When you said that, I was like, okay, well, but Jordan Fisher just feels so much younger. And that also, you
right.
know what? Let's just get into it. Let's talk about In the Heights. You wanted to discuss
yeah.
something about how it's interesting how Lin cast himself in this show versus how they put Ben and Dear Evan Hansen, which I also just like. Everything about the returning cast members in this movie just filled my heart with so much joy because
right.
they did it the right way.
Well, it was just especially just when you see Lin at the beginning, because this was my first exposure to In the Heights.
This was mine too, yes. I suppose we should start
yeah.
there, is that I
yeah.
was not super familiar with In the Heights. I obviously knew it was a thing. I remember in school I had some friends that did musical numbers from In the Heights, but I never really
right.
listened to the album. I never saw it, never saw bootleg and all that stuff. So we were both
pretty new. Yeah, I listened to, like, Blackout. That was the one that would always show up on Spotify
mm-hmm.
when it would do, like, the go-through. But that was really, yeah, that was really it. And so when Lin came on screen for the first time, I thought he was going to be, like, a really important role.
Oh.
He was pivotal to it somehow.
Okay, I guess at least I knew that much. I was just like,
no,
oh,
I didn't.
Like, he's just like, he's the Piragua guy. He's just like,
right.
whatever.
I don't know. I was thinking maybe there's going to be something revolutionary about this character. I thought that he won the lottery ticket.
Oh my God. That would have been sick. Can you imagine?
I thought it was going to be
like this amazing movie with all these great things. And then it's just like, hey, this random little dude is the one that won the lottery ticket.
I was thinking maybe there's something there, but I was wrong and I set myself up for failure.
That's hilarious. That's amazing. This is what a theater degree will get you, folks. Save yourself now.
You're going to overanalyze everything and think, what role is this person going to play?
But I also, I mean, you probably assume that because, like, Lin was in the movie. So it's like, you would assume he's probably right. playing a really important character, especially since, you know, in the original In the Heights and in Hamilton, he cast himself as the lead. So, like, him right. casting himself as a very small side character is a very different situation for him.
Right. Especially when, if you think about it, realistically... And it's funny because, like, Lin is considerably older than Ben Platt. Lin-Manuel Miranda is 41 years old. Here's the thing, though, is that he looks like, I don't know what deal he made with who, but he still, like, if you just dyed his hair the right color, you could still have him be Usnavi.
But I'm so glad he wasn't.
And that's the thing, is that having him be Usnavi would have made so much sense because he was him on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
It's Lin-Manuel Miranda,
right.
who people know, who has that bankability to it.
Mm-hmm.
He could have so easily just came in and said, if we're going to do this, I get to be the lead because we
yeah.
need to, what are they saying with Ben Platt? They need to like preserve his performance or something.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it, which he very easily could have, but he didn't because it's not about him, which was just really nice of, even in how he's been advertising it and promoting it too, is he's very much about like, okay, I've done really great things and I've had great opportunities and I've achieved great success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do I help other young performers get there too? Which was just really nice.
That is, yes. No, all of that you just said is exactly right. And it's amazing. And I think the thing with Dear Evan Hansen, that is what they're saying, that they have to preserve his performance. Because in the prom movie, Caitlin Kanunen, who played Emma in the staged version of the prom, she, you know, like won a Tony for her performance and auditioned for the movie and didn't get it. And she like publicly talked about that story on Instagram. And she's like, this isn't about the fact that I'm the only person that can play Emma. It's just about the fact that like they treated all of us that were in the stage show really poorly and they need to do a better job. And so I think it's interesting that they did the opposite of that with Ben Platt, but that people are upset. but I also kind of understand why, because it's like there have been so many people that have also played Evan Hansen after Ben Platt that have done a really, really good job. I mean, he got to perform
right.
at the Tony. I feel like I remember his Tony performance and it was super memorable. Like, I thought it was amazing.
Right.
I thought it was really good. I think about it all the time. I mean, he's on the cast recording and he's just, I don't know. It's just.
I think it would have, there would have been a better way to pass the torch.
Exactly.
In Dear Evan Hansen.
Exactly. He could have played someone else.
He could have played Connor's dad. He could have been Connor's dad.
Yeah. They could have just aged him up and he could have been Connor's dad. Like,
I just look at it the same way of like, you know, 2004's Phantom of the Opera. They could have brought back Michael Crawford.
They could have.
But they didn't. They gave it to a small up-and-comer named Gerard Butler.
Well, and I liked too that they brought back a Christopher Jackson in a really cute way. That whole situation was just
right.
really adorable. To like these two men, like they were the two male leads, are just back as these two cute little side characters.
Right.
It just like, my heart was filled with so much joy that they were in the movie, but that they didn't take away from everything. Also, oh my God.
Right.
How did nobody tell me that Patrick Page was in this movie? I was sitting there and like we took everything in my power to not scream that Patrick Page was in this fucking movie and that, get this, he played one of the bad guys. I just...
In the theater, that was one of the moments where I was very, very happy that I was alone because I just went, Patrick Page! I yelled it. I audibly yelled
it. Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And let the special ending, nobody stayed for the special ending. Like, we've been closed for a year and people forgot that a lot of movies do special endings now. And it was just the two of them. And I was just like, yes! I was so happy. I'm really glad that you got to have your Patrick Page moment because I thought of you and I didn't tweet about it because I was like, Brendan needs to experience this for the first time without knowing.
Well, I think it's also just because, you know, coming off of the Hadestown video, Patrick Page has been everywhere. And so this is one of the places you wouldn't expect to see him. You bring up an interesting point, though, of there were so many references that only theater, like, even if you're not a fanatic, like theater people would get.
And I'm sure that I missed most of them because like outside of Lynn and Christopher Jackson, it's like I noticed the little Hamilton tune that was the like the playback when he was on the phone.
The You'll Be Back when he was on the phone, yeah.
The people behind me, there were like three women sitting behind me. They like giggled and were like, oh my God, at that. And I was like, hey, cool. Everyone in this theater is cool.
It's a shared universe.
I missed most of the references. I was very tempted to like look at a list of all of them so that we could list them off, but I'm sure tons of people are doing that already. What, which...
Want to do it right now?
I mean...
On this theater podcast about nothing?
Which ones did you notice outside of the three, the whopping three that I just pointed out?
They made a Star Wars connection by having Princess Leia's dad.
I would have never explained it like that, but sure. Who knew this whole time In the Heights was actually just a Star Wars movie? I mean, there's lightsabers in it, so yeah.
Oh.
This is just...
Give me that universe.
This is just one of the... this is what Disney would classify as Star Wars legends. They're like, we're not going to consider it canon until we feel like we want to, and then we'll make it canon.
Oh, well, here we go. Okay. I was going to give a little bit of... I've got a Refinery29 article pulled up on all the pop culture Easter eggs.
High journalism. So, here we go.
If anyone hasn't seen In the Heights yet, skip ahead... So when you hear me go, and then that's how you know that we're done talking about these In the Height
just
spoilers.
Hit forward 15 like three times. You're fine.
We got Christopher Jackson, of course. Let's see. There's a Mark Anthony cameo.
Yes, that's correct. At the end credits, everybody was like, Mark Anthony? And I was like, oh shit, that was Mark Anthony.
Yeah.
And Mark Anthony's character was also one that was added into the movie, based on what I've seen, is that Sonny's dad was not in the stage show. I know they also took out some things between Nina and Benny, which I would have liked to see more of, because I really liked those two characters. I related to Nina a lot. And I thought that their love story was like maybe more compelling than Vanessa and Usnavi's love story. So I thought it was interesting that there was stuff that they cut out from them, because I think I would have really enjoyed that. But I've read a lot of articles at this point on like what they've changed and what they've cut out. And like, I'm going to try to watch, a version of the Broadway show if I can, but I think I will say I loved the movie. It was very well paced. It was very emotional. And everything that they changed and cut out, I think they did with so much intention and goodwill that it was all to better the story. So even though I have not seen the original and people might be upset, I love what they did with it. Like, especially because as a medium, theater pacing is just different. Adapting it into a movie like will inevitably mean you have to cut things out. And so I'm really, really glad that they did. And that Lynn also wasn't just like, this is my creation and like, I'm going to do this and it's got to go this way. And it's like, no, like you brought in a new director and like you let him run with certain things. And because of that, it was so much better.
Right. And that's the important thing of, we talked about it in the producer's video too, of a film is not the stage. And certain things that worked great on the stage are not going to work. You can't just copy and paste it directly.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so I think that was what went really well, too, is that, you know, it's a different medium on film, but that also just brings with it so many more opportunities to just nuance the storytelling and really have fun with the things that you can do on film that you can't do on stage, too.
It's also like, I think it's important to note that there are things you can do on film, like with a close-up shot, that you need like a whole musical number to do in a musical. Right. Like a couple years ago, here in San Diego at the Old Globe Theater, they did a musical adaptation of the movie Benny and June. Which was like a Johnny Depp movie from the 90s. I only bring it up because like in that movie, they added, like, obviously it wasn't a musical in the first place, but they added, like, a bunch of musicals for Benny's character. That's funny. His name is also Benny. but it's for exactly that reason. It's, like, something in film that, like, with a close-up shot and the right music and a really good actor, like, you can convey, like, a very clear set of emotions, but you just cannot do that on stage because of the distance between the audience and the performer.
Right. Well, I'm thinking especially just at the end with when he's in the bodega and he makes the decision of what not to do, and you see just how the camera can take the audience on a journey of where to direct the eye to what you're supposed to be seeing that you couldn't do with just a set design. Like when he sees the, Pacienza y Fe mural.
Good job, Brendan!
Or the pictures and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I remember watching that when I was in the theater and thinking that's something that you can't do on stage.
Exactly, yes. That, no, then that's exactly right. And so they lean so well and so heavily into the medium to make the storytelling better or different than it would have been on stage, which is just amazing, because that is what the movie musicals lack so much of the time, is like that particular nuance, or they're not created by like well-seasoned filmmakers that know what they're doing and people who like...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only thing that kind of took me out of it, and it's dumb, was when they were dancing on the side of the building. That was the only thing that took me out of it, just because they hadn't really alluded to anything like that. So they kind of introduced a new rule of this universe near the end.
I have...
Because I know they've had, like, they had the dream sequence, but that one they kind of made it out of, like, okay, this is a dream, like, with Abuela. But that one, it was like, they were very clearly in the world, and then all of a sudden they were dancing on the side. Same with when Vanessa walks outside and she sees the fabric flowing over the edges, but then it goes back into her eye, so you could tell it was a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
They never did that with the side thing, so now I just have to believe that they're both bitten by radioactive spiders.
I mean, like, hang on. Patrick Page is in this movie, so is it just Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark?
It's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Yeah, it's the prequel.
So I think we've answered that question. Yes, Benny and Nina are both just... bitten by radioactive spiders.
Nina is actually Arachne.
They're part of the multiverse. That's what this is. This is Whoa. Part of the Spider-Man multiverse.
It's part of the Lin-Manuel Miranda multiverse.
That's exactly right. I'm gonna go to Disneyland. I'm gonna see
and
them.
Star Wars. And,
yep, all of it. it's all connected.
Wow.
This just in. Disney just bought out Lin-Manuel Miranda.
They did that last year.
Oh, that's right. Disney already owns the rights to...
They did that as soon as he signed on for the Mary Poppins Returns movie.
Oh, I guess that's right. I definitely forgot about that was the thing.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
Did you see it?
I did. It was like I walked out and I was like, that was like a really good Mary Poppins tribute band.
Okay. That's fair. Well, it's just like, I'm curious too, because
they turned
like,
her. Have you not seen it?
No, because that was another movie musical. Like, I really dislike movie musicals, although I love musicals. And so it's very funny how forgettable they are. I don't know. I feel like In the Heights was just so delightful, and it was so not forgettable, and it broke the mold in so many ways.
I drew a lot of comparisons between In the Heights and Rocket Man with how they decided to approach musical numbers and things, too.
Let's hear about that. I did see Rocket Man, and I loved Rocket Man.
Did you see Rocket Man? Did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I did not see Bohemian Rhapsody. Everyone, my mom was like, this movie's like God's gift to Earth, Gabby. Like, it's the best thing
you're
ever
gonna see. That's what my mom was like, too. My mom and me constantly argue about which is better, Bohemian Rhapsody or Rocket Man. And it's kind of hard to compare the two because, yes, they're both, they have music in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Rocket Man leans more into movie musical territory, which I was not expecting, especially because we were just coming off of Bohemian Rhapsody, which was very much, here's how it happened, here's the story. But it's just, with Rocket Man, you get more of that freedom of exploring with a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Because already at the beginning, you can set up that, you know, it doesn't have to be super realistic, because who the hell just jumps up on a table and starts singing?
Right.
There's already that suspension of disbelief. But that was just, I could see a lot of similarities between Rocket Man and In the Heights, just with how they decide to approach the cinematography for different sections.
That is super interesting, because when I was thinking about other movie musicals, that was one that did not cross my mind at all. I mean, I watched Rocket Man on an airplane, so I definitely watched it on like a teeny tiny little screen, but I really enjoyed it also. Richard Madden is in that movie, and he's top tier on my list.
Oh yeah,
what a man!
He's my pick to become the next James Bond. He would be a great Bond.
It looks like they're gearing him to be like the new head of the MCU, though. So I don't think so. I doubt he'll be Bond if he's like a big boy in Marvel movies. No, that's super interesting. I totally forgot. Rocket Man really was more of a proper musical because all other side characters sang. There was singing throughout it. And the pacing of that movie was really great. And it was, you're right. Yeah, yes. It was also very high energy. It was very colorful. It was super engaging. And it didn't, like, it wasn't apologetic about what it was. It
right.
was just like, this is what we're doing. And you believe it and you enjoy it because we're not like, oh, ha ha ha, we're going to sing songs now. Isn't this weird? But it's actually just a movie.
Right.
They were just like, nope, this is it. This is the universe that you've stepped into.
Right.
Welcome to it.
Like right off the bat. Mm-hmm. They're just like, when he opens up the door and he's got the wings on, you're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yep. You're like, I understand what this is going to be.
It makes me think of, is the key to a good movie musical having that balance and exposure to both the theater world and the film world? Because Elton John had that exposure to both, and he was very involved in Rocket Man.
That's true. But I feel like Lin has been in a lot of movies and TV shows, but I don't know that he has really made them.
Well, I know that he brought on the same book writer to help with the screenplay.
That's true.
So he got, like, it feels like he covered his, because he's got enough experience in both.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you said, the important thing is getting that team together that
yeah.
you can rely on. And so he got someone who's really great in film, and then he brought it and mixed it in with someone who's really good in theater.
And he made it happen. And I'm also like, who am I to say, like, Lin-Manuel doesn't have that much experience. Once again, two people living in 350 square foot apartments with their cats making a podcast.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, that's all podcasts are. Who are we to say anything?
Who are we to say anything? But I think you're right. It's about having that knowledge in both film and theater, because they are so different and there are so many good things about both of them, right? Like, you and I obviously love theater, and I'm studying theater because I appreciate theater as a discipline. But I love both mediums in, like, such a powerful way, where I know a lot of theater people are like, oh, like, movie acting? Ugh. I could teach you movie acting in 2 minutes. Or, like they don't work as hard as we do. They don't this. They don't that. And I'm like, honestly,
all you do is whisper.
Exactly. It's like, I think theater people who entirely dismiss the mediums of film and TV are just incorrect. because it's also such a hard medium to do correctly. And yeah, something like In the Heights, that's this perfect little baby of both of them, really does it. Because they cut a fair amount of songs out of the movie. I'm assuming to allow more moments for dialogue and to help with the pacing and things. But even that worked
right.
really well. It wasn't like, this movie musical doesn't need to be sung through. There's still a lot of songs in it, but there's also a fair amount of dialogue. I don't know. It flowed so well. I liked this movie so much. It was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt a lot more natural and just all around better than, like,
anything. It's like, I can't think of another movie musical that I have enjoyed this much.
It's just been a really dark, like, since 2012, it's been a very dark period for
mm-hmm.
movie musicals,
mm-hmm.
I feel. Like, especially just once Tom Hooper became, like, the gatekeeper of movie musicals.
Right, and then for Dear Evan Hansen didn't do that. They did that same thing that they did for Les Mis and Cats, that the actors, like, controlled,
like,
the tempo of the singing, and then the music has to follow along with them. And that's just, like, that's, I think, a lot of also what makes me think Dear Evan Hansen is going to fail, because that's not how musicals work.
Yeah.
Can you imagine showing up to rehearsals for your musical and you're like, hey, musical director, I'm the lead, and I think that, like, the tempo and the beat of this song is going to go this way, and ensemble, y'all are just going to have to follow me, and musicians, y'all are just going to have to follow. Can you imagine?
That makes me think of, it makes me think of something that when I was interviewing Michael Chorney for Hadestown,
mm-hmm.
when they were doing it off Broadway, they were going through, I think it was Flowers, and he was like, I think that this is slower here. And so he slowed it down. And it kept like he kept slowing it down. And it was getting like a good reaction from the house. But when he talked to the director and when he talked to who was it? It was whoever was playing Eurydice at that time. I can't remember who it was. I don't even know if it was off-Broadway specifics. But they just brought up how it's slowing things down and it's hurting the pacing and it's hurting actors getting to their cues.
Yes.
So no, I cannot imagine having...
You can't. That's just not how theater works.
It's a well-oiled machine.
Exactly. In the basic sense, it's still theater and it's still a musical. And for music to sound good and right, it needs to follow a specific set of rules, right, which is not that complicated. Plus, so I don't understand why people are trying to mix that formula when you have like...
And I can get what they're doing where they're trying to like... It's that thing of trying to bring that spontaneity and the live... authentic feel of theater to film.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thinking, like, when I go to watch a movie musical, I want like a really good sounding soundtrack.
Yeah. And the soundtrack, like, soundtrack for this movie is so good.
Oh my God. Blackout was just so crying.
It's amazing.
I was crying.
Oh, I suppose we could talk about all the tears that happened while watching this movie.
Oh my God. You can do a tear counter. And it's incredible because it was like our first exposure to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, I don't know, if we have the conversation about culture, it's like I had said earlier, right? I was born in Brazil, but I've been mostly raised in America. And I think there's a lot of issues brought forward in this musical as well. Like, Abuela is great because a lot of people who are like me and who are like Sunny even grow up in America and they feel... connected to their culture in America, but they also feel really connected to this culture of where they're from. But it feels, it's like, it's hard to be nostalgic for a place that you've never been to, right? And I've been to Brazil. I was born there, but I haven't been back since 2005 when I was 8 years old. So it's like, it's a place I feel connected to and it's a place that I have culture from, but it's that culture has always been something that I've been connected to through my mom and through my grandma. And so seeing how everyone connected to their culture through each other and through their matriarch, like, was really, really emotional for me. Oh my God. Oh my God. No way am I going to cry right now. That's so embarrassing.
Don't apologize for your feelings. What?
Well, and it's just like, it's like Latino representation on Broadway is just not something that really exists. It's something that maybe we'll talk about on the podcast later that I wanted to make a video about in the future. Like In the Heights is most of it. That other little show that Lin-Manuel Miranda did for NPR. What is that thing called? What the Heck I Gotta Do?
Tiny Desk?
Be with you. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, what is that? What, Tiny Desk? What?
No, it's like he like made this like mini musical.
Did he really?
Yes. Of course he did. What the heck I gotta do to be with you? What the heck I gotta do? What the heck I gotta do to be with you? What the heck I gotta do? Who do I have to be for you to be with me? You told her all this in class? Yeah. Well, I texted her. I was like, what the heck I gotta do? There's that, like, in the 70s or 80s, there was this show called Zoot Suit, which to this day has been the only time there was a Chicano story on Broadway. Like, Latina and Latino actresses, like, are so rarely cast in anything. Like, as a Latina woman, like, I never see myself portrayed on stage, ever. And like, let alone have any kind of representation of like what it is to have this culture of these people who are connected through their family and are really fucking loud and just like to dance and eat food and be connected to each other. Like, so much of just that simple representation made me so happy. And it was also like, it was like, just that was enough. But it's also just nice to see Latin people in every aspect, right? Like, I loved that they changed, obviously, I loved that they changed that the two salon ladies were queer and in a relationship. That just made me so happy. Especially the one played by Stephanie Beatriz, because she's also a bisexual. She's what the kids call a bicon.
And that she got to play this like queer character who's also just kind of stupid. And I just love that. It's just like she's hilarious, like she's hot and she's kind of dumb, and that's so funny. And that like the person who saves Vanessa is like is a queer Latina businesswoman. Like she's the one who has the money and she's the one who has the power. Like that's just delightful. I just all of it, I don't know. Because I know I won't get this kind of representation for many, many, many years. Like, I would like to say, you know, maybe this will happen when Broadway reopens, but I doubt it. But a show like In the Heights is not going to happen again for a while. So, like, the fact that it existed on Broadway and the fact that it was turned into a movie and that the movie is doing so well just, like, was really, really, really great. And it makes me very happy.
Why do you think it's not going to happen again?
I don't know. These things just don't happen. I'm just, I guess I'm looking at the history.
Well, that, yeah.
If I'm looking at the history, I don't see it happening again. I would like to hope that it happens again. But, like, that's the thing. Like, if In the Heights can continue to be a very profitable endeavor, like, that's great. Right. Then maybe they'll be able to repeat this again. But it's also just, like, access on Broadway to people who aren't already wealthy is really, really hard. Like, the fact that Lin was able to do this at all when he grew up in a community like Washington Heights, which is in New York City but is not Broadway, is just amazing. And so I think for even people to get access to getting to know the people they need to know to get a show on Broadway is so, so, so difficult. And those people are just statistically more likely to be white, statistically more likely to be wealthy. And so people of color, Latino people, Black people, Indigenous people, Asian people, like, they have way less access to these things. We don't have those stories on Broadway because, like, those people aren't being given access to tell their stories on Broadway. That's why I think it won't happen again for many years, because the systemic issue is very, very deep. Because I also don't want to be like, you know, it's the white people's fault, because it's not. Like, it's that's not how this works. It's that there's a systemic issue here of certain types of people not being able to get access to create the art that they want to recreate for large audiences. So that's the thing that needs to change. And that's not an easy thing to fix.
It's also made especially more difficult too when you think about how with where Broadway is headed with all of these, like it's getting harder just to put new stuff, like original ideas on Broadway at all too.
Yeah. Oh, and it's like
everything is turning into an IP.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny too, because I look at all the
musicals.
Which makes
it even more difficult.
Reopening and that are touring and stuff. And it's all like, did they make a Mrs. Doubtfire musical?
It's in previews. Yeah. It's got Rob McClure.
Oh, no way. Rob McClure is in the Mrs.
Rob McClure is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Damn
yeah.
it. That makes me want to see it. I hate that makes me want to see it.
It was in like its third preview, I think. It had just barely started previews when they shut everything down.
See, that's interesting. No, but it's exactly that. It's like it's so hard for a new original story to even get to Broadway. And like Hamilton in many ways really truly changed the theater game.
Right.
And like what Hamilton did was amazing. And it's nice that it's however many years after Hamilton that people are able to talk about Hamilton's shortcomings, because when it came out, it was just so revolutionary. I think that that's wonderful. But like Hamilton could have never happened if In the Heights wasn't financially successful.
Oh, absolutely.
Like if In the Heights hadn't landed, even if it was really good, even if it was as good as it was, if it wasn't also financially successful on Broadway, Lin would have never been able to create Hamilton.
Right.
And so it's shows like that, and it's people like him that we need more of. And there's just not that many people like him.
Well, it's also just an interesting fact too of like, you know, Lin comes from an interesting position too of where his family's pretty like set up pretty well too.
I think like that is a really good instance of like someone being able to use like what they have at their disposal and their privilege.
Exactly.
Privilege is such a like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's such a like polarizing word.
Right.
It's a hard one to use. Like I'm not trying to demonize anybody, but like, what Lin-Manuel Miranda did was wonderful, because he used the assets that he had to tell other people's stories and to give opportunities to others. Like him casting, like them putting Anthony Ramos at the head of this movie, which also like I'm in love with Anthony Ramos. Everything he does is like delightful.
Right.
Like that is someone doing it right. Like they use the wealth that they had and the people that they knew and the power that they had to like lift up the creative voices of other people. And like that exactly. is, I guess that's the thing. Like that's the change that we need to see. And there's just not a whole lot of that.
Right.
We need more Lin-Manuel Mirandas, I suppose, is the thesis of my argument.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, it's just, it's interesting because especially while, you know, me, white male.
Which again, I don't want to demonize you for being a white male.
No.
I think that defeats the
purpose. No, that's not, it's not demonizing. It's just, it's a very important thing to state of like I am a white male and so representation, you know, it's never been something that I've really thought about, you know, because you grow up all around it. And it was really watching In the Heights that I was like, wow, this is a story that not a lot of people get exposed to,
mm-hmm.
that just isn't really told, that isn't prominently told. And I just don't like that. Because it's just, it shouldn't, like, it's great that we have this. It's great that we're celebrating it. But it just sucks that it's at a point where the medium is so saturated by just telling one type of story.
Mm-hmm.
That when something different like this comes about, we're like, wow, this is so different and so alien and so unique.
Exactly. Because it's like, this sort of thing should not be revolutionary. Like, telling love story and like presenting
right.
different kinds of music and presenting certain culture should not be revolutionary.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sad thing is that the people who should be watching this to expand their views on what the world is and that they're not the end all be all of culture and society aren't going to be watching it.
Well, I mean, I'd like to hope so, that they would. It's hard to...
I'm just thinking of people, like, in my family.
Mm.
So it's people like my mom that I want to see this. To see that, like, hey, what you see isn't, like... like, that's, like, you're... like, just saying, like, oh, they're happy isn't a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's deeper layers to it. And that's all I could keep thinking when I was watching it was like, my family, the ones who are just so close-minded and who think the world operates in this certain way, this predominantly white way,
mm-hmm.
is not, they're the ones who need to be watching this. But then again, it's also the thing of like, you know what? Maybe they don't need to watch it because they're pretty much set in their ways. And it's the people who are on the edge or the people who are open-minded to it that it's going to help grow the numbers of people who understand, I like to think.
Right, and that's why it's, like, it's hard because in, like, the sort of circles we're in, it's having this conversation of, like, we need more compelling stories and we need things more than just, like, representation.
Right.
But it's like, it's hard, though, because on the surface level, like, representation is still just what we need. And, like, pop, like look at every, like, you know, family sitcom that people are sitting down and watching, you know, every day at 8 p.m. It's like most of the media that is being consumed by people is still, like, so homogenous and it still doesn't have,
right.
like, absolutely anything. And, like, what I liked about the queerness that they added to the In the Heights movie is that it was subtle. They weren't like, did you see that the salon ladies are gay? Like, I
right.
liked that it wasn't a big deal, and that, like, Abuela didn't disown them for being queer because, like, in a lot of Latino cultures, that's also the situation, which is unfortunate, but it's true. And so I liked that it was subtle, but, like, in also a very serious sense. Like, most people, I think, actually wouldn't catch that they were in a relationship. I think most people, like, I almost don't want to say this because it's so embarrassing, but in that opening scene where they like wake up in bed together, I was like, oh, like who is that she's in bed with? Like, does she like have to share a bed with her family? Like I didn't look at it like me
queer woman who like wants nothing more than to like date other women in this period in my life. I was like, oh, like, are they family? Are they friends? These two women sharing a bed together? Like, that was still my thought, because I'm like, they just like that basic representation does not exist.
Right.
Representation is what we need. Representation matters. And I hope that so many people go and see this movie and take their families to see it. And it's very, very interesting hearing your perspective on it as well, because, like, obviously this movie hit very close to my culture, even if I'm not Dominican, which is mostly the culture that it focuses on. Like, so many aspects of it were familiar to me. And I was very curious, like, how people who are not Latin in any way reacted to it and thought of it. And, like, especially because my reaction was like, oh, I need to go take my grandma to see this movie because she's going to love it. And yours was like, there's no way in hell my mom would ever watch this movie. Like, it's just so different.
It's not that I don't think she'd watch it. I think she would watch it.
Yeah, okay.
And I might need to find a way to get her to watch it.
I mean, it's just a great little movie.
It really is, yeah. It would probably have to be the same way that I was able... I did a second showing of Hamilton with my family, where they didn't, like... where they did approach it more open-minded, and they actually really liked it. So, all I can say is that while watching it, it was just a really good reminder that, you know, America isn't just all white people. Like, I think that's just an important thing, is that it's really that melting pot idea, and we need to not be so afraid of embracing other cultures, mm-hmm. of highlighting other cultures, or seeing, like, if somebody decides to share their culture, like in the Heights, that we don't take it as, oh, they're trying to overtake our country. Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Right.
Like, we're all just floating on a fucking rock, and... like, none of us know what the fuck is going on. Like, we just... ugh. People are just so dumb. People are just so stupid that, like... ugh. That they just can't look at history or look at, like, everything that's going on around them. That they're just living in this fantasy world of, you know, this is the way it's been. This is the way it should be. This is the way it's always gonna be. Nothing mm-hmm. should change, ever. Mm-hmm. Anything that changes is threatening my way of life. Like, who the fuck do you think you are? Like,
exactly. When I think I'm like, you grew up in Utah, which is, you know, Utah, and I grew up mostly in Southern California and San Diego and LA. And so obviously Southern California is a massive melting pot. I think, you know, I'm probably 20 minutes away from the Mexican border. But just beyond that, I mean, lots of people immigrate to Southern California because it's a great place to live and there's major cities here. And so it's also very interesting hearing the perspective of someone who did not grow up in cities that were massive melting pot, because the perspective is just different. And so hopefully this movie gives more people an opportunity to see the kind of thing that they don't normally see. And the Heights did such a good job, not only of like adapting the musical, but of also just creating, like, hopefully what can be a massive blockbuster just in general as a movie. That would just be, if that can happen with this movie and it can be repeated, like, that would just put us in the right step forward to keep on making these sorts of things happen. All right, well, the episode's getting pretty long, so we should probably wrap it up. We would love to know what you thought of the In the Heights movie. You can tweet us at Too Much Expo. That's the number 2 Much Expo, because we're cool and new age.
We're spicy.
We're spicy. This is a spicy podcast. Brendan, where can the people find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Wait Wings, and you can check out our YouTube channel, Wait in the Wings. We're diving into season 3. And that's those are the places you can find me. You can probably find me at the Caribou Cafe sometimes.
Wow. You can find me on Twitter at Gabriella Dazed. It's a play on words. Or on YouTube, Gabriella Day is just my name. It's really hard to find, but I'm going to make a video about In the Heights. I'm very excited. I have not been writing or doing anything creative during this whole moving process.
But I watched the movie and then I came home and I wrote for like 3 hours and I was like, cool, art inspires art. It's funny how that always does that. So stay tuned for that. And now Brendan and I can debate about the Wait in the Wings season 3 lineup.
Look at the fireworks, the fireworks.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.